He's our voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Hey there, Dr. Brown. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Melissa?
I can't complain. Thank you so much. I was reading an article that Triple E has now been detected in six towns in Connecticut. I should say it's been detected in mosquitoes in six towns, not people, mosquitoes.
Correct. Yes.
So I wanted to just talk about Triple E. I know we've heard about it before, but sometimes when you hear so many different mosquito-borne illnesses, you start to kind of forget which one is which and what impact you could have. So what is Triple E and what does it mean if a human is bit and gets this?
Sure. So Triple E is a virus. It's Eastern Equine Encephalitis. is what it stands for. And it is even though it is carried by mosquitoes, it is still a rare infection in humans. So it does occur in mosquitoes, and we do look for it, and we need to make sure everybody's careful about it. But it can cause it, and it can cause a pretty significant infection. So an encephalitis is an infection of the brain. It leads to a pretty serious, again, when it occurs, and rarely occurs, but when it does occur, it can lead to inflammation of the brain, and then in turn you get headache, stiff neck, change in mental status, and it could lead to bad outcomes.
Ooh, okay, but haven't we heard in the past, Dr. Brown, that this is actually a bigger deal for animals who get infected by it?
Yeah, so there are certain versions it's interesting because it's Eastern Equine Encephalitis.
Right.
So it's actually concerning because it's one of those viruses. And there's a few viruses that are out there, not necessarily in this area, that affect horses.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. And that's actually where it was initially detected. That's why it's EEE. So it is. And then there were some concerns. And there are certain types of viruses that actually infect a horse and then can infect a human after. Nothing in this area, nothing that I want to go into because it's super scary. But let's just say that we don't have that in this area.
Okay, good.
Some of these hemorrhagic fevers. But again, it is something that we need to be cautious about. It is the time that you need to be careful about mosquitoes and the mosquito-borne illnesses. So making sure that you're careful, especially dusk and dawn. But as I said, if we start getting these cold mornings and cold nights, it'll start killing off the mosquitoes.
And another thing, Dr. Brown, which I think people are hoping for cooler conditions for this as well, I noticed that Texas is now the latest state to warn people about Vibrio. It just seems like more and more states are warning people about this because they're detecting more and more cases from the water and from raw shellfish, I should say. And I didn't know if we've seen anything more here in Connecticut, but like I said, more and more states, it seems like across the country, are sounding the alarm. So people, of course, are panicked by it. But we're essentially waiting for the waters to get colder, right?
That's exactly right. And this is the time so that it would be, I would say, natural. This is the appropriate time for those warnings down in the Gulf states, in particular in the Gulf, you know, anything related to the Gulf Coast are going to be more concerned about because it does have a tendency to get warmer in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
The water is a little bit different, and there's definitely a concern about Vibrio. So that is sort of the more typical. Again, it's uncommon, but typical in that area. It's less typical to be sort of in our area.
Okay. And again, we are talking to Dr. Brown from Griffin Health, our infectious disease expert. And here's another one that I don't know if this falls under your category, Dr. Brown, but I have found that anytime I basically ask you stuff about the body, you basically know. It's pretty crazy, actually. I don't know if it's because you're like a doctor or something. But a new study suggests that using tobacco and marijuana is tied to much higher risks of depression and anxiety. Researchers at the University of California, San Francisco studied nearly 54,000 U.S. adults and found that those who use both substances experience depression or anxiety at almost twice the rate of people who didn't use either one. Surprising or no?
Not surprising.
Really? Why?
Not at all. So that's actually very interesting. Even though tobacco and marijuana or THC, cannabinoids in particular, act in different areas of the brain, it is about this overstimulation of the brain. And when you overstimulate the brain, either you overstimulate it with a stimulant, or you understimulate it with a depressant, you have to remember that when you're not using it, the likelihood is that the opposite effect is going to happen. So when people use tobacco, for example, it actually calms them down. So you would expect, if it's calming them down, that it's affecting those areas in the brain to make you a little calmer. When you don't use it, you're going to get the opposite. You're going to have increased anxiety, increased stress. That's the same thing with marijuana, which I think people don't necessarily understand, that, you know, a drug like that has a tendency to sort of make you calm, make you, you know, not worry about things, sort of have this apathy, so just not really concerned about the world. The opposite of that is you will get stress, anxiety, and paranoia is another common side effect for people who use a lot of marijuana.
Well, I think that's what's interesting, Dr. Brown, is a lot of people, maybe not tobacco so much, like I've never really heard people using a cigarette to calm down per se, but marijuana, you know, like for healing, people who need it for medical use, you obviously have heard about, mm-hmm. people who their mind is racing at night, they can't go to sleep. Marijuana gummies or things like that. Like, I've heard of it being, you know, a calming and in kind of a simplified way of if anything, making, you know, depressing thoughts or anxiety or things that are keeping you awake or making you sick go away. So I thought that was interesting to hear that it actually could have the opposite effect on you.
As most medications, you just need to be careful because if you have something that has this overwhelming effect that, you know, again, and I'm not saying casual use. I mean, listen, we've seen that in casual use, it seems to be okay.
Right.
But I think those who are using regularly have the risk of developing, you know, side effects. And those side effects can include the opposite effect of what you'd want.
Yeah.
Almost like a rebound effect. So that anxiety, that paranoia, those are common withdrawal type symptoms from marijuana.
But I think that's a really good thing to note, especially because it's legal in Connecticut and you can get any form of marijuana. Essentially, you can get it in gummy form. You can get it obviously to smoke. I'm not a smoker, so I don't know.
Sure.
But I do know that obviously it's available in many different forms in legally in Connecticut. So I thought
right.
this is kind of concerning
right.
and you should definitely ask your doctor, especially if you detect in yourself mood swings. I think that's a really important thing to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Melissa, I think, and listen, I'm not, this is not about giving medical advice. This is about sort of keeping things in moderation because,
mm-hmm.
listen, we know same thing, heavy smokers, that we know the risk factors associated with that.
Right.
We know heavy alcohol users, we know the risk factors associated with
that.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
So just because it's legal doesn't mean that it's not potentially bad for you.
Right.
Or isn't bad for you, I should say, because tobacco is probably one of the, you know, smoking is probably one of the worst things you can do, leading to a lot of bad outcomes.
Yeah, that's very true. Dr. Brown is here, and earlier this week we learned an FDA advisory panel said that decongestants in over-the-counter medications, very popular in over-the-counter cold medicines, don't actually work. The panel unanimously agreed about the ineffectiveness of how did I say it correctly last? I said it so good. All right, wait. Phenylephrine.
Yep.
No.
Phenylephrine.
Phenylephrine. Son of a biscuit. I had it right.
You're
the first time.
You're pretty good. Pretty good.
No, it's fine. I was totally at doctor level, and now I'm not anymore. Phenylephrine. There you go. And the decongestant is found in very common medications like Benadryl, Allergy Plus, congestion, Sudafed mm-hmm. PE, many that we're very familiar with, Dr. Brown. I want to say I'm shocked, but you know what? I'm not. You know why I'm not? Because I've used all these dang medications, and they don't work.
Right.
I mean, especially this year when so many people have had allergies and the post-nasal drip and the congestion just won't go away. How did it take us this long, though, to realize that these are ineffective? And what does this really mean now for these over-the-counter
sure,
medications?
Sure. And I think it has to go back a little bit to what was the active ingredient and what is currently the ingredient. And I think that's the big thing. So I don't know if you realize, but there was a major shift in the early 2000s from pseudoephedrine. So pseudoephedrine, I know it sounds very similar. Pseudoephedrine was the active ingredient in Sudafed and some of these other nasal decongestants. The concern was that this is going to sound really bad. The problem is that pseudoephedrine can be modified and nefarious people can make it into methamphetamine.
Oh, so okay. Actually, that, yes, then I remember this. The connection with meth. Yes, okay. Yes. I remember. So that's
was,
why I was.
It was actually taken. It was actually taken. Two things happened. One is it was actually taken out of the active ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And two was is that anything that has a decongestant in it. So anything that essentially has a D in it has now been moved to, you know, over the counter. It's over the counter, but you have to go to the pharmacy, or you have to have your license or something along those lines to get it. So you know that a lot of those you don't actually have the pills there. You actually have to go and, you know, you bring the card and you can potentially get it from that standpoint. So it actually was changed to phenylephedrine, which was thought to be just as effective as pseudoephedrine. And it's not. ultimately that was discovered. Now the problem is that when you're using over-the-counter medications that are deemed to be safe, sometimes they're not as rigorously researched and identified. Sometimes because of cost, sometimes because they're not restricted. So again, these do take a little bit longer. That's the same with vitamins too. You know, vitamins are even less regulated, and in turn, that takes a longer
That's
time.
Why
the concentrations
I'm weird about
are
melatonin,
variable.
Though. That's why I'm so weird about melatonin, because we still don't have findings on that either. And I'm like, nope, right. I'll just figure out sleeping. I'll just figure it out.
So,
I don't like that.
So that's the difference. Now, that being said, phenylephrine, it does appear to be effective if it's used directly nasally. So if it's actually squirted in the nose, there may be some effect that's there. But if it's taken orally, it doesn't look like it looks like it's not effective. And again, I think you as well as myself and others are like, yeah, that makes sense. It doesn't really work.
But we've just kept using it. You know what I mean? Like, do you know the amount of money that Americans dump into these over the counter medications just to, like, basically mentally tell ourselves we're making ourselves better when really we're not? We probably should just go to a doctor because we're making it worse. We're just not doing anything basically to improve the problem. Like, that's frustrating. So frustrating.
Right. It really is. And again, using these medications, I think there are usually these huge combinations of things that are in there. So some things may get relieved and some things will not. But ultimately, that's the research that shows that it is, you know, and over the counter, that's not really that helpful. Now, that doesn't mean that people who have legitimate reasons or have concerns about, you know, about using it, again, there's still some nasal sprays and there's still prescription pseudoephedrine. So you can still get
but you have to have a doctor's order to get that.
Correct. Yes.
Because you know what? It's interesting that you say that. I was thinking about people on planes because I'm one of those people that I have to have. When I was a kid, especially, I had to have a prescription in order to fly because my ears would rupture. But I always wondered. I was always like, why can't I just take over the counter? But it's funny because I always had to go see a doctor because I think I had tried over the counter stuff and it was not effective. And so my ears did rupture on a trip one time. So it's like it's not that way anymore. But when I was a kid, especially, I had to always get a prescription.
That was likely pseudoephedrine.
Got it. Huh.
So I know, and it sounds so similar, right? It's phenylephrine versus pseudoephedrine. I mean, so, and again, there are side effects with phenylephrine where you end up having, you know, it can cause increased blood pressure, it can cause anxiety. So there's side effects associated with it, but the main purpose of taking it, which is a nasal decongestant, doesn't appear to be working.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty frustrating, like I said. And what'll be interesting is to see what now happens to those over-the-counter medications. Like, do they get taken off the shelves? I don't know. Like, what is even the purpose of them?
Right, exactly.
So, should be interesting to see. Well, Dr. Brown, I appreciate always getting your insight into all these stories. I think I threw you about 5 there today, so thank you for handling all of them. You're the best.
Not a problem. My pleasure.
Always appreciate your time, and we will talk again next week. That's Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health right here on WICC.